Hi, I'm Tahara J. Smith, founder of Power by Tahara J. Lipstick Brand, where we are helping women access their power one shade at a time. At Power by Tahara J., it's more than lipstick. We are about mental wellness and empowerment. I've combined my love for lipstick and color psychology to help women tap into their best selves. Each power shade has meaning and is named after an affirmation. So while wearing it, you feel beautiful, affirmed, and powerful. We offer lipsticks, glosses, scrubs, and more. Our products are high quality, highly pigmented, long-lasting, non-drying, liquid matte with a smooth application, cruelty-free, and vegan. You can get your shades and more at PowerByTaharaJ.com. That's Power by TEHARAHJ.com. So you can access your power one shade at a time. Get yours today with promo code TALKTOME at checkout for a special discount.
Talk to Me, the podcast, is brought to you by
Simply Simon.
You're listening to Talk to Me, the podcast with Jamie Simon. I am Jamie Simon, and we're back again another week, bringing you great conversations and content. And I just want to say thank you to everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing it with your people on social media. Thank you for all the kind words. Thank you guys for leaving feedback on all of the social media platforms that you can do that on. Thank you guys. You've just been great to me, and I appreciate you. Thank you for appreciating it. We're back again with the part two to last week's pod. It is the ASAP Alex Ward interview. You guys have been loving it. Been hearing a lot of great stuff about it from musicians and everybody else. Just appreciating this gift that he is. He's an amazing dude. My big brother, love him so much. We're going to go right in. We're going to pick up from last week. And listen, this is where we pick up with this week's pod. He was telling us last week the story about how he and his new bride, his new wife, how they met. And so we're going to go right into it again. This is the story of how they met, but this is part two of the Alex A. Ward interview.
Talk to me. Would you talk to me? Talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, and she wait, hey Jamie. When Gam told me in 2020 to help her or to check her out, and she reached out to me and asked me, when can we talk about maybe doing some work together or something? I asked her a simple question. I said, cool, we can talk about that. I said, where are you from? Do you know that made her run? She's like, I ain't got time for this. He wants to know where I'm from.
That ain't got nothing to do with music. I'm like, how am I supposed to work with her if I don't know where,
you're from? Right.
Jamie, she disappeared. So I ain't seen her. I ain't heard from her in 2 years. Yeah. Yet alone, I never seen her.
Right. I guess.
I'm just like, I said, this guy crazy. Right. Whoever this is. And I was going to call Kim and Kimbrell. I was going to call her and tell her. But anyway, we fast forward a year. We are so happy. We thank God for each other every single day. And she has her ministry and I have a ministry, and then we come together. And it was just really amazing that it was that divine. So when you asked me, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm married now. There was no way to just tell you that story without telling you all of this. It literally happened. And yes, that name is on her because she has something playing. She got the music note because in her mind, she's going to turn it into Sword, change the A to an O. And do the Sword of the Lord or something. But the truth was, God said this tattoo was put on me. He allowed that so I could see it that day because it was the wrong ward. Yes, she was wet, but she had to be with that ward just to be at that table with the right. And at the studio, she was telling me different stuff. She was like, later, she was like, there was a point she saw me working, and then she said the music notes started moving.
Man, look, see.
Oh, no. So it's little stuff like that. When you meet her, Jamie, because you will, because we're coming to Chicago to do this masterclass.
Got to. Absolutely.
You'll definitely meet her. But that's how we got together. So, yes, I am married. I'm happily married. And it was that fast. Met June, January 29th, proposed May 20th, and got married July 8th.
Matt, listen, I am so blown away. That story is amazing. I absolutely love it. But I'm so happy for you, big bro. Like, I'm
thank you, because you know, you know me for some time.
Yes, man. I'm just happy for you, bro, because I know what that means to your life. I know what that means to your ministry. I know what that means to your existence. He that findeth the wife, come on now. So I know what that means to you, man. So I'm happy. And I can't wait to meet you. Tell my big sister, I said, hey, what's up? Can't wait to meet her and meet y'all and be with y'all, man. That's great. And tell her thank you, man, for blessing the people. Does she know she's on the show?
Well, first of all, she's live every day. She goes live. She teaches every day. She's so used to being in front of a camera. She does a podcast. So she's used to it. I said, I'm on a podcast. She said, oh.
Oh, she's ready. She's ready. Okay, yeah. I love it.
She getting me ready.
I love it.
Listen, when I got married, everything changed. I even had time for us to do ours.
I love it.
We were struggling getting it done. I think I was supposed to get married before I do yours.
Listen, because I had to have his story. Definitely had to have his story.
You definitely to have this story. Oh, so no, it's a great thing. And the good news about it is, and I must say this, you know, my kids are happy.
Yeah.
You know, Miranda's cool. She's happy. She's engaged. She's about to get married.
Yeah, that's a blessing too, man. Me, wow.
So we all still get along. We still cool.
Man.
We all met, you know. So there is no negativity from my previous marriage.
Thank
and the children
Lord.
Are healthy in that sense. So that's a blessing. That's how you know God is really good.
There you go.
You know, it's the church that makes us think that things are just crazy, but we make things crazy. We don't have to make things crazy,
you're right.
You know?
You're right.
So I'm definitely going to tell Ronnie, you say, hey.
Please do that, man.
Yeah.
Please do that, man. But look, it's just, again, it's a blessing to hear that, man, and just a blessing to hear that everything is going great. That's what's up, man. So let me pivot a bit. 1998. Something magical happened. A musical threshold had been crossed. Two musical mavens offered a musical production entitled Everlasting Life. The artist, Kim Burrell. The producer, Asaph Ward. There's so much meat on this bone. So I'll just start here. How did you and Kim meet?
Okay. This is a crazy story. So you don't know the story?
I do, but we need to hear it.
Okay. So it was 95. You know, that Trinity record came out, right?
Exactly.
Kim Burrell was like just the singing phenomenon that was happening. You know, when she sung that, oh, come on, he that. Remember that song?
Yeah.
So it was really dumb. And everybody was like, who is this? Who is this? Who is this? I was saying, who is this? Who is this? So it was just crazy. So I decided that I took my mom, since we was doing our state recording. I was 25. And I was like, Mom, we getting ready to do this recording. We should get Kim Burrell and Dorinda Clark Cole and Dwayne Whitehead.
Okay.
So she was like, okay. So let's just see if we can get Kim Burrell. So you know, I turned over the back of the CD and I called Kim. I called the number thinking I would get our manager, but it was really Kim's number, you know, and wow. Didn't know that.
Wow.
I was like, I mean, she had just started.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So I told her that we was working on a record and that our state choir was doing a record and we would like for her to participate on the record. And she was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. Who's all playing on the album? And this, that, and the other. And I was like, myself, my brother, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't naming nobody. When I said Jonathan DeBose, she said, Jonathan DeBose playing on your record? I'm like, yeah, that's my brother. That's my big brother, you know? She was like, oh, so it was Jonathan DeBose's name that helped me get her. Because it just wasn't making sense for her. She was getting calls out of the wazoo.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so of course she comes and does this live recording. She does this duet with what's my man that I just told you came? Dwayne Wyatt.
Yeah.
So she did a duet with him. And what ended up happening is after the end of the concert, the recording, I paid her her money. And I told her, I said, you know what? I said, you should come to the studio. I'll just, you know, I'll show you the studio. You know, and she's like, cool, I want to come. So she came to the studio and I was giving her some industry advice. You know, there's a lot that was going on back then in her contract and different things she was doing and with this other company she was with. So I was just helping her out,
right,
giving her advice. And then so she came to the studio and she was like, oh, this studio's nice. I was like, yeah, yeah, this is where I'll be doing my stuff. And I just threw my MPC 60, hooked it up. I said, hey, let's do something. Let's just see what happens. And she was like, oh, okay, cool. So I did that Everlasting Life song number 12. The For God so loved the whole world. That's all.
Uh-huh.
So I just started playing the beat and playing the chords and then put her on the mic. And she started, I said, just sing anything. Just do anything. And she sings, For God so loved the whole world. And he gave this. And then she started singing the scripture, mm-hmm, to the music. And I was like, this is crazy. And she was like, oh my God, this is great. We recorded it. So I sat at home with her. We was just having fun. It was nothing. It was just that verse. We didn't do nothing else. She did the Don't You Wanna Live Forever. She did do that. And she stacked it, but that was it.
Okay.
And she went home and a year went by. I get a call from, I get a phone call and I say, hello. And it's like, hey, let's speak to Asaph Ward. And I was like, this is Asaph Ward. I was like, who's speaking? He's like, this is Fred Hammond. And I said, this ain't no Fred Hammond. You know, back then, at that moment, Fred was, it was just huge where he was.
Of course.
And it was crazy. He was even on a plane calling me. And I didn't know Fred.
Okay.
You know, and he was just like, hey, you know, well, you know, we're thinking, I'm consulting for this record label. We about to sign Kim Burrell. And, you know, so we're trying to get some things going and this, that, and the other. I said, oh, man, that's great, man. She just did this thing with me. I'm talking like that. Man, she's great. Man, that's amazing. And I thought about it. I'm like, why is he telling me?
Right.
And I was like, why are you calling me? And then he says, well, you know, we're trying to get this deal done. And, you know, you're our manager. So, and I was like, to myself, I'm like, I'm her manager. Like, what is that? And I'm like, this don't even make no sense. So then I was like, okay. I played along. I went in and played along.
Right.
And I was like, I'm okay, so let's do this. But I went in, I'm going back to it. That's what's making me stumble. Just thinking about it. I went back and so we negotiated the contract. And after, you know, doing that, they told me they was going to have me do two songs.
Okay.
The record label wanted me to do two songs. But before that, I called her as soon as we hung up. And I called that number from the back of the CD, because that's what I do. And I said, Kim Burrell. And she just started cracking up on the phone.
Oh, my God.
And I said, well, she says, hey, so I didn't know who else to trust. I didn't know anybody else. They needed, I didn't have a manager. I didn't know what I was doing. And you helped me so much with the information. I just told them you was my manager.
Wow.
You know, so that's how I started managing Kim.
I started
managing her. And then we got to the studio. They wanted me to do my two songs. So I was going to cut two songs. They said, you do two songs and then everybody else can follow suit. Well, I was crazy back then, man. I cut 10 songs.
Mm-hmm.
I needed them to pick the two out of the 10, like pick the two favorites. So Max Siegel and Frank Cooper came down to listen and to choose the two songs, but they heard all 10. And they looked at each other and he's like, well, what is this? Like, we ain't never heard nothing like this. I was like, yeah, these are just demos, you know, and Kim was smiling, I was smiling. They was like, they said, finish these 10 songs, you know? And that's how I ended up doing the whole Everlasting Life album.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, like, this was really amazing. So that's what happened with that. That's how me and Kim met. And since then, I mean, we worked on that record. And then, of course, she became my first son, Asaph, my first son, Asaph Jr. She became his godmother.
Yeah.
But then it got to the point to where we was just family. I would come there and then she would come to us and then we'd record. And a lot of times when she came to me, it was a lot of playing, a lot of joking. We weren't able to really get recording because she's so silly, you know. So we had a lot of fun, worked on a lot of records. And I've done 3 records with her.
Yes.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this Everlasting Life, man, the song that you just said you guys just kind of were playing around with in the studio when she came to the studio, that became the title track of a work that is one of those pivotal records. Like for me, when I'm thinking artists and when I'm talking artists, their pivotal album, I always call their thriller album, right? That's how I do it, right? So right. So for Kim Burrell, the Everlasting Life record is her thriller, at least for now. It's right. Her thriller, right? Because obviously she's not done musically, but right now it's her thriller, man. I don't know if you realize just how inspirational, just how pivotal of a project this was. I know you, so I know you're just doing what you do. You're just doing what you hear. You're very calculated and all of that. But when the music comes to you and you get inspired, you catch a vibe and you just do your thing. I know that when you guys were doing this, that you didn't necessarily know. There are testimonies across the world of musicians and singers and producers who were inspired to do what they're doing today because they heard this record. So I know you didn't plan to do that. But listening to that record, Asaph, like it literally, I was listening to it the other day. First of all, it's a timeless record. That's one thing. But I was listening to it the other day and just shaking my head. I mean, I've heard probably most of those 70 plus records that you've done and produced on, because I've just followed your career like that. But this particular one in 1998, nobody was doing stuff like this. Come on, Matt. Who was doing that kind of music in 1998? And even today is doing the work that went into the production, the musicianship, the level of musicianship, the level of creativity. And a lot of people don't remember that particular song, the tribute song, is a song that Kim had recorded on the album before that. A lot of people forget that.
That is so true, right?
And so it was a tribute to her. I don't know how you guys even got into doing that. These were instrumental songs on a solo album. I mean, like, and things like this. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, man. Listen to that. Nobody was you. Basically, these were jazz records, jazz fusion records on this gospel record, man. Just how did y'all get to that, man? How did y'all come up? Like, how did you even get to? Well, we just got this music. We just gonna throw these tunes, these instrumental tunes on this solo record.
Well, the thing was this. Once we got to this song, first of all, for the first 2 weeks of working on her record,
what we did was we ended up trying to figure out which direction we was going to go, right? Because she's an amazing singer, but we just didn't know what the brand was going to be. So in order for me to create for her, I spent 2 weeks with her playing the piano and telling me stories about her childhood.
Wow.
So for 2 weeks, she would just play on the piano. We'll come in the studio and she's just playing the piano and telling me stories about her mom and telling me stories about her sisters and stuff at church. And when she wrote this song, I wrote this song. And I was thinking of this. And what I was doing was learning what a B-flat 7 chord meant to her. Because, see, we play a B-flat 7 differently than the way she would play it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, and most singers will sing a F.
Right.
She sings the G.
Yes.
Yeah, so I had to learn the magic behind how she sings. I had to learn how she plays. And once we did that, I was able to come up with how we was going to do the music. So I realized she was a musician.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we got to find a way to bring that out too. So I snuck those interludes on the album. Kim didn't even know I did it, you know, until she came one day and I showed her number 6, you know. So she was like, what is that? I was like, yeah, that's a Kim's request. Named it. I had to name it something that the label won't fight.
Right.
You know, so we did that. And then we did the tribute.
Right.
And then Jermaine Nelson, he wrote Prodigal Son. And he was just a genius out of Berkeley.
Yeah, man.
And Nat's on the guitar player out of Berkeley. They was young. And I was like, nah, I'm going to let him do his song. And I just sat there and produced it. But it was like that in that reprise was so bananas back then. Their label said, take it off, because they didn't understand it at all.
Exactly.
They didn't understand it at all. They was like, no, we're not putting this on there. Like, just exactly. Gospel record. What are y'all doing?
Exactly.
So when it got time for mastering, they didn't know I was smart. I did not say nothing else until it was time to master. And then I added it to the mastering list. Once he got mastered, he found out it was on the album once.
Look at that. I'm sorry.
I was rebellious. Man. See, sing God and tell God, told God no. When I saw his wife, when he saw his wife, the same guy that did not understand the piano at 13, that same guy is like, oh, y'all gonna tell me I can't put this on here?
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I snuck it in on mastering, and they were so mad at me. I'll never forget they were so mad. But then, you know, you got Chicoria, you got Dennis Chambers, and then you had Prince, you had Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, Chaka Khan and different people. And when that record came out, they all was like, oh my God, what is this?
Man.
Everybody was like, oh, and they loved the whole thing and they loved the interludes. And next thing you know, the label was like, okay, all
right. Right.
They liked it.
Right.
You know how those movies are when they're bad, when they told you not to do something and then you do it, then they glad about it later.
Of course.
Yeah, that's how that got on there. I snuck those interludes on the album.
Now, I never knew that. Now, that was rich. I never knew that story. Wow.
I definitely did.
I freaking love that. I love, but because, man, what it became to people. I'm telling you, man, that this record not only was pivotal for her, but it was just pivotal for people.
Oh, it was pivotal for me. It was definitely
pivotal for you, of course.
What you have to know is before that record, gospel didn't trust me.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
They didn't let me do no records. Nobody would let me do nothing. I would turn in music and turn in songs. Nobody would hire me. Nobody would let me do it. And that's why I went and did secular music. And that's when I was working, doing the Jodeci stuff and then
Boys and
all that. Yep. But when I left secular, because God said it was time to do music for him, I went back and I was like, God, I'm in left. They don't trust me. And then the first record I get out the gate was Kim Burrell.
Wow. It was the proving ground for you. I mean,
yeah, it was the record that validated me. And after that, you know, 60 some records later.
And listen, I want to say something else, but you put your whole foot in it. And I don't know if you knew, like, this is it. I don't know if, like, if that was the energy you went into it with, but you put your whole foot in this thing, man. I mean, I'm like, you blew everybody's mind. I mean, stuff that we knew, I mean, we had been knowing that kind of came out of you. Obviously, at the time, the industry didn't know. But you just, man, you wrecked this thing, man. And obviously, it was the launch pad that blew you to the super producer that you are today. And I know you probably had trouble hearing that, too. But whatever. It is what
I do. But I give God the praise for it. I do know that I do not take that for granted. I do not take it for granted. It was definitely God's plan. And I had to just, you know, I had to go with it, man. I remember 2 weeks working on that, out within that record. I had the flu and I just spent the night at that studio. I had the flu. I worked through the flu, picking the right band.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Oh, I found him. I couldn't get it to sound right. And I was like, what's missing? It's just because the way Kim is singing. She's so country and so doing runs and doing different stuff that don't fit no musicians. So I had to bring the organ inside of the control room. We brought the organ to the control room. She played piano and organ on I Found.
Yes.
You know, and then I just played horn.
Hey, so listen, tell the infamous snow dump story.
Well, first of all, anybody who's worked with me will all seem to want to give this type of thing. But I worked Kim hard, she says.
Indeed.
Okay. She says, I worked her so hard, she just could not wait until the record was over. And it was a particular session that I just drilled. It was hours. Yeah. And it happened to be, you know, snow outside, a lot of snow. And she didn't want to be there. And because Kim really is a creative that doesn't like the studio, but right. She loves creating.
Right.
If you, when she starts creating, you can't stop her. She don't want to stop.
Right.
But she don't want to be. She don't want to be there. She don't want to be in the studio. So she was in there a long time. And when I was done and I said, we're done for the day, she said, oh my God, great. I got to go to my car and be back. She went outside and we had ordered some Kentucky Fried Chicken. So it was a big bucket and it was gone. And she filled that bucket up full of snow. And then she came into the studio. And then she said she had it behind her back. So I couldn't see it. And I guess she was waiting to see how I was going to respond. I guess I could have not had this happen. But she said, you know, you don't feel bad for working me this hard, do you? You don't feel bad at all, do you? I said, I sure don't. I said, it was great. I got what I wanted. And you didn't work that. It ain't that hard. It wasn't. I was running my mouth.
Right.
I looked up and next thing you know, there was a ton of snow on me. And in the control room, the mixing board and everything. She wasn't even thinking. Thank God it worked still. But it was like, she got it all on the mixing boards and everything. And she laughed real hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, she dumped a whole bunch of snow on me in the control room.
Indeed. And listen, one who has worked with Asif, I can attest to the way he drills singers.
Oh, Lord. Listen,
I know it. He's done it to me. Listen, if he did it to Kim Burrell, he will do it to everybody and anybody. But he's so meticulous. I'm going to tell you something. And we talked about this earlier. There's something so prophetic about just the way musicians hear. The way you hear, there's something about the way you hear. And I'm telling you, I have never met anyone like Asif Ward that has the ear that he's at. I've never met anyone that has this ear. He can hear stuff that is not revealed to the average human ear. And it, to me, it just speaks to his sensitivity of hearing and the spirit. I mean, it's crazy. The stuff that he hears, and he only drills singers and musicians or whatever because of what he hears. And so I think it's an amazing gift to have. But it's if you cannot be a punk if you're going to work with him in the studio. I'm going to tell you right now, you come with your big boy drawers on, your big girl panties on, whatever you call it. If you're going to work with him in the studio, because he's going to, you're not going to get it right the first time. He going to hear something wrong about it and he going to get it. He's going to work you until he gets what he hears. And I mean, I love that about you because, you know, nowadays it's so much technology out there. You really don't have to do a whole lot of work. But
This is true.
You know what I'm saying? But you still, you have that work ethic, man. And I come from that. So that's...
You know what that is? You know what that is, Jamie? I was always trying to figure out what that was, what makes me do that. And it just seems like, you know, I'm meticulous and I'm this and I'm that. But then I realized that what being a producer really is, because my mentors from afar was Quincy Jones and David Foster.
There you go.
So I just know the stuff that they've done, you know, there was a lot of intentionality. And I realized that my drive, everyone has a drive for why they do something.
Indeed.
My drive for why I do what you just described is because to me, I did not produce the project if I didn't present the artists in their best light.
I got it, man. I got it.
So it's all about the artists being in their best light. And their best light might mean this run don't need to be here.
Yeah.
But this needs to be here. This vibrato, because I, you know, I'll do something like, man, it'd be like, do it again. Man, that wasn't it.
Right.
That one was it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm looking, I need people to feel that word because you said needy.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to tell somebody that you needy, I remember I told Crystal Aiken that, you know, because she's like, when she said, I'm needy. I want it. When she said needing, I'm like, when you said needing, I need people to know that you mean that, like you just thirsty for it. So singing it good is cool, but if I don't feel like that word means,
right,
then I have to do it over. So a lot of that is the presenting the artist in the best light.
Yeah. Go ahead. But again, if you didn't hear the way you heard, it would, none of that would matter. You could say, hey, and according to what I hear, this is the best light for the singer.
This is true.
But your ear, man, is just, it's out of this world. It's
really, oh man, thank you,
man. Please, just listen, the stuff you play. If people just listen to the stuff you play, all of you musicians that are listening, all of the ones that Asef has inspired, all of the ones that play or try to play like him and sometimes try to act like they don't listen to him. Right. Them. I'm talking to y'all. Right. Yeah, I know. I said it. Anyway. yeah. His ear is out of this world, man. And so it couldn't just be the professionalism, because that's what you're talking about. You're talking about the professional side, which is great. But you the way you hear, man, pushes that whole thing to a different place, man. So producing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So producing, you have to choose different fabrics and different colors to paint. You've got to match different musicians with different musicians. You've got to match different musicians with different singers. How do you do that? Because normally there are three visions going on for a project, right? There used to be the record company, the artist, and then the producer. So how do you paint all of that together? Like what drives you with picking the stuff? Is it the record company? Is it the artist? Or is it just you? How do you put that stuff together?
Well, I got blessed after doing the Kim Burrell record, and then I followed with the Dorinda record, Times Two Hair album, and then, you know, start adding. After I did that record, people just started trusted me as being a lawmaker. So because of that,
wow,
what I didn't realize the benefit to that was I didn't get hired unless someone felt like they needed me.
Got it.
Now, needing me means I know what my sound is. I know this is what I do, but I need something more. So because of that, it was always my decision of who I use. Now, I could probably count three or four projects, no more than four. On my hand where I needed to access the musicians maybe that the artist wanted me to use. And then sometimes that ended up getting changed. But for the most part, I have a rule that I try to find that once I find out what the brand of the artist is, you know, I'm a sci-fi guy.
Absolutely.
And even though it doesn't make sense and it's make-believe, there's some of these shows where a person has a spirit animal or something.
Yeah.
I believe that an artist, that principle, an artist has a spirit musician. There's a spirit instrument that magnifies a singer. sometimes it's a drummer, sometimes it's a bass player, sometimes it's a guitar player, sometimes it's keyboards. So I try to find out what instrument makes the artist jump out. What makes it pop?
Wow.
What instrument is the red shoes?
I got you.
You know, what is it? And then once I know that, I build the band around that. So let's just say that the take a Frankie Beverly Amaze guy,
okay.
A band. He does grooves.
Yes.
So the drummer has to be able to play grooves. He don't have to head hunt.
Gotcha.
He plays grooves. So for me, once I have that drummer that can play pocket, my bass player is going to be somebody that can move around a little bit more wilder.
Gotcha.
And I have to figure out if the groove requires the keyboard player to just pad more, my guitar player is going to be a wild card. He's going to be somebody he's the guy that's coming in from the chimney.
Okay.
So I always think of things like SWAT and thinking this people going to come in through the front door. These people going to come in through the back door. You know what? This one's going to come through the ceiling. And I put those players in place if they know each other or not.
Yeah.
Kim Burrell, for instance, she has multiple instruments that support. And of course, it's very clear that a keyboard player is key for her, but that's when she's singing by herself somewhere. And if she's going to sing a solo with a keyboard player, and that's it, an organist or a piano player, that's important.
Right.
That person's got to be able to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, because she can go anywhere. But for the most part, bass players drive Kim.
Really?
Yeah, bass players.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I remember.
Bass players make her move because...
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember when we went to London with her.
You remember London, Jamie?
You had Reese. We brought Reese Fitzgerald. So absolutely. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
Bass drives her, and the bass player can't be messing up. But what he can do is there's a version of her where the bass player gotta be out there. And then the drummer gotta be. Now, I'm gonna tell you the craziest gig I ever did with her. We went to New York. I ain't gonna never forget this band. I will never get this bad. It was me and Luke Austin. Lord. Luke Austin was on keys. I was on organ and aux. And Chris Dave was on drums.
Wow.
And Daryl Freeman was on bass. When I tell you, between Chris Dave and Daryl Freeman, they never played together before.
Wow. See, I know you like doing that stuff, too. You like putting guys together.
I do that on purpose. I brought Daryl down. Chris, of course, played with him.
Right.
So that made sense. But Daryl was somebody that I wanted to put with Chris.
Yeah.
And the way they approached that gig was crazy because it was like they were like, yeah, what about this? And then Daryl like, what about this? And then Chris like, nigga, what about this?
Right.
Man, they was creating stuff that has never been heard before. I wish I could have recorded.
I was just about to ask you, is there any footage of that anywhere? Because I need it today.
I don't have it, bro.
Oh, my God.
That was crazy because, you know, that's when musicianship drives her. She can go anywhere. So, yeah, I'd like to put people together. You know, if I'm going to use a Calvin Rogers on a song, and I'll try to figure out who am I going to match with him. And then I do calculated things like that. Because every artist, think about it. If I'm working on 20 women, female records, I don't want them all sound the same by using my same kit.
Exactly. No, I love it.
I create different sounds for them so they all don't sound alike.
I mean,
after a while, man, it's like, so I was like, my Morette records had a different band. Dorinda had a different band.
Yep.
Kim had a different band. You know, and from any of these other favorite artists I work on, I try to. You might see a name appear here and there, but I always mix up the bands.
I love that. I absolutely love that about you, man. I mean, because again, you got to have a certain ear to know what certain gigs require, what certain vocalists require. And then the chemistry that can and the kind of musical marriages that happen between guys that, like you said, maybe never played together. Because Daryl and Chris and Luke, shout out to Luke Austin. That's another Chicago guy. A lot of people don't know that. Shout out to Luke.
Man, he amazing.
Oh, man, please. Listen. So, man, that's crazy. That four piece, I would pay to hear that.
And they'll never be together again.
Never again. Yeah, exactly. I love it. And that's what I love about it, because your mind just thinks of crazy stuff like that. And I know it was killing. I know that was absolutely out the park. So that's what's up, man. So look, I have held you long. And we've talked about a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I usually on these shows, I give a name and I say, it's kind of a word association thing that I do with names. I give you a name and then I say, hey, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Or just tell me what you feel from these names.
Okay.
There was only one name that I could think of that I needed to say to you on this show. When we first started talking about doing it, it was only one name. I mean, it's many names that are out there that have been associated with you. There was only one that I could think of that I wanted to hear what came out of you when you heard this name. The name is Donna M. Ward.
Is it one word or is it a sentence? What is it that I'm supposed to say?
Say what you feel.
Well, I will tell you the one word, there's only one word that comes up when you said that. It's necessary. To me, she is a subject.
Mm-hmm.
She is a brand. She is number. She has a number in the aisle of the store.
Wow.
The question is, when you have an iconic hero or someone who's trained vocally, like everything I do is because of this woman, because she taught me how to sing with vibrato. She taught me, she trained me how to sing. So that helped me with vocal producing. She took me to all the conferences and taught me. She had me listening to Parliament and Sugar Hill Gang and Earl Clue and Ramsey Lewis and the Hawkins and the Andre Conn. She made us listen to that stuff. So she helped shape me musically. You know, she wrote over 200 songs. So she inspired me and understood. I had to get up at 2 in the morning to me and my brother. Had to get up and sing with her when she wrote a song because she had to test it out. And we had school the next morning. So from a songwriter and arrangements. And then we had a group called Donna Ward's Son. She took us everywhere. And yeah. We sung at all the musicals and everywhere else. Of course, I was the high pitch. I was soprano. And she was alto. Her brother's a tenor. So she taught me how to perform live. And then, of course, we went to studio. When she did different stuff with people, she taught me how to stack because I had to sleep.
She had you in the studio stacking vocals when you were 8 years old, bro.
8 years old, man. Stacking vocals. Like stacking soprano. Do it for three. We got to do this. But baby, she was like, baby, now you remember how you did it because you're going to have to do it three more times like this. And I'm like, for real? Like, but I did it right the first time. Like 8 years old, that don't make sense. Why am I doing it again on top? And then I thought I was smart. They have this thing called the chorus. You can put a chorus on your voice. I'm trying to tell my mom that so I can eliminate. No, I need you to stack it because right. We need to be able to pan it. So this is my mom's, right? So she was a different form of a Joe Jackson because she understood the music. So I say necessary because when somebody needs something specific, you know, oh, that's on aisle 11, you know, yeah. Or... you know, a subject that you take in class, there would be a Donna Ward subject. You know, yeah. She's necessary. She was very necessary for us to even be having this conversation.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's the word that comes with me with her. Is like, you know, she's the one when I went to college to visit at age 17, because I had a full ride at Florida A&M. I went to visit, and you know what college is like. It was parties. It was women. It was everything. And I never forget, I had so much fun. I didn't think about music at all when I was up there. I came home, and I guess what I did? I cried again. You know, it was a manly cry this time. And I told my mother and father that if I go to college, I'm not going to be a producer because I'm not going to be able to focus there.
Yeah.
So my mom said, she looked at my dad, and I don't know if he approved of it or not, but he said, she said, son, if you promise me that you will be one of the best producers, gospel producers out there, I will make you go to college.
Wow.
And my parents did not make me go. And I spent 17, 18, and 19 years old becoming that producer. And like, here I am today. So though she's no longer with us, I kept my end of the deal. And I just hold on to that. You know, even when I miss her, or if I'm thinking about her, or what does she stand for, or if I hear a question like that, all I know is she wanted me to be better than her.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I took that on. It's like, that's what parents are supposed to do. Some of us are jealous of our children. We don't want to help them. We don't want to do anything. We living through our children. No, my mom wanted me to be better than her. She was proud of me. And I can hold on to that. She just wanted me to be one of the greatest producers out there. And the world says I am. So I take pride in that. And I realize that she was necessary for me to be happy today. So what? That's what I say.
Wow. 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 The world doesn't just say that you're one of the greatest producers. The work does.
Wow.
Yeah. The work does as well. Who believed in you, man?
Actually, I mean, I gotta admit, there's two or three people that believed in me. Of course, Kim believed in me when I came back, because she just believed I can do it.
Yeah.
Dorinda's somebody who believed in me.
Okay.
She knew when I did that live recording with her and Kim, you know, she knew right there and then that I had what it took to do what I was doing. And then I must say, there's a guy named Big Charlucci from New York.
Okay.
He's the one that brought me in to do secular music. He heard my track and he was like, oh man, we about to blow up. You know, every other word was a cuss word.
Of course.
He was like, he's straight up from New York. He's the one that had me in. I was in Rose with Onyx and Wu-Tang Clan and Met the Man. I worked with Prince Charles Alexander, the mixer, because of him.
Right.
You know, Jodeci and all these other people. It was because of him. Like this dude in New York, he just believed that I had what it took. He knew I was also church boy, so he never forced me to do nothing that I didn't want to do.
Sure.
He believed in me, and that pushed me to learn all of my professional savvy. So when I went and decided that I was just going to do it for the Lord and went back to gospel, and that's when Kim and Dorinda believed in me.
Yeah.
You know, and then the actual first artist the actual first producer to believe in me was Donald Lawrence, because I got turned down on a project. They said, well, Donald Lawrence is going to do it. And I was ready for that. I'm like, cool. I started learning about publishing. I'm like, I'm just going to get my publishing.
Right.
I let Donald do it. And then Donald came to the conclusion when he heard my stuff. He's like, I'm not going to do it like this.
Right.
He's like, He said, let us both do it. It's like, he'll do the music side and I'll do the vocal side.
Wow.
So that's when we did the Men's Standard.
Yes.
First record.
Yes.
And so he had to give me a shot. He had to tell the label, because the label wasn't going to do it.
Right.
Donald told the label that Asif has something special and let him do what he does. And then I'll oversee it and I'll do it. And that's how I got my chance to do that. Because
yeah.
Donald believed in me on that. And yeah. Then from there, after the Kim Burrell record, everybody believed in me, and then it just worked. You know, it's amazing. God has been good to me. And then I was getting ready to quit. I got to tell you this, you know, and I ain't going to get into this story. But I was getting ready to quit in 2013. I wasn't going to do music no more. I wasn't angry.
Yeah.
I just felt like I plateaued. Like, gospel music don't want to go further. It don't want to do anything besides what I was doing on the level that I was trying to do it on.
Yes.
It was like, it was just different. So 2013, I was about to stop. And I never forget, that's when David Foster FaceTimed me. And I don't even know how he got my number.
Lord, have mercy.
But God, again, I told you, is another reason. I'm stubborn. I'm realizing something must be wrong with me. Now that I'm thinking about it, because God goes through divine ways to get me to see something. I did. No one could have stopped me from quitting but him.
Wow.
God sent David Foster. I know God did. He allowed Foster to reach out to me because he told me, when I asked him why was he FaceTiming me, because I didn't believe it. It was Eddie Brown and them, because J. Drew, Kevin Powell, and all of them was with me in Atlanta when he FaceTimed me. And I was like, this ain't no David Foster. He said, yes, it is. He took me around his house. He showed me his Grammys and showed me the Pacific Ocean. And he started to have my house sits on that. And he started, you know, bragging, just showing me everything. And I said, okay, yes, David Foster. But when I asked him why he called me, why you reached out to me, he said they was at a party. He said, we was at a party at my house last night with NBC. And I had Stevie and Josh Groban and Taylor Swift. And he was naming all these artists. And everybody was at his house. And they was all talking, saying what's going to happen to music when him and Quincy leaves this earth.
Wow.
And he says, Stevie, who I never met Stevie Wonder. I really haven't never met him. He said, Stevie says, you need to check out this guy named Pace of War. He says, if y'all left, he could easily take over.
Wow.
And what was crazy was they all sat on YouTube for 2 hours listening to my gospel music. And when he told me that, he says, man, so yeah, man, you're interesting. You're the way you hear things. He's like, I want to see you work. I want to bring you out here. You know, he says, I'm the producer. You're not. I'm just going to pay you the raise. He want to make that clear.
Right.
Hey, I'll play that ring. I was there. I had to come out.
David Foster. Oh, my.
I'm going to fly you out. I'm going to pay you, you know, and this, that. But you're going to get payment and credit arrangement. But I'm the producer. You got it? I said, okay, perfect. Great. And he says, man, he brought me out there for a couple of weeks. And that's how I worked with Mary J. Blige on that Christmas album, because that was a record he was working on. And
right,
it got to the point to where he was watching me and he was like, this is amazing. He's like, man. And then he was just like, you know what? This is going to be the first time anybody's ever really co-produced with me like this. He says, you're going to be my co-producer on this. And then he let me co-produce. And that's how I ended up working with him. And we texted each other probably a month ago. And he's doing Broadway now and some other stuff. He said, man, I ain't trying to produce like that no more. It's like, I'm trying to do my bucket list and do Broadway or whatever. But I just couldn't believe that one of my mentors from afar, I thought I would shake his hand one day and he ended up FaceTiming me. And that's when I realized that I couldn't give up on music in 2013 because it took God used someone like him who don't even reference God.
Exactly. Come on.
To tell me that I shouldn't stop.
It's not over yet.
And that's when I just said, okay, there's more. And so that was a blessing. So I guess that's the thing. God would go. He went out of his way to make sure I had what I need, you know, to get me on that piano, to get me the wife that I have, and to get me to not stop doing music. He went to great lengths to do that.
Man, if it wasn't for the fact that we've already gone long, if it wasn't for that, we would be here, man, talking just about that experience. David Foster is one of my all-time favorites.
Yo, man, he's large, yo. He's on a different type of thing.
Man,
he got a plaque with over 300-some million sales. Like, I was like, who does that?
Man, when you told me that you were there working with him, because I don't know if you remember, we were texting and I don't even know why what we were talking about, but you text me, you was like, yo, I'm in the studio with David Foster. I was like,
yeah.
I said, hey, Seth, what did you say? Who? You said David Fuller? Who do you say? She's like, David Foster. Man, I said, man, this is ridiculous. And then you went on to tell me about it. But hey, listen. That's absolutely outstanding, but it makes sense. It makes sense to me because that level of gifting should be calling for your level of gifting. It makes perfect sense in my eyes. You probably don't see it, but I promise you, what Stevie said, that's my pops, everybody know that. What he said is definitely the truth. You guys, that it's in good hands, that music is in good hands. You guys have that kind of ability, man. I heard this. The Culture Tour, New Edition just did the Culture Tour, and that just went very good. It came here. It went all over. I heard that the fellas called Fred Hammond to do some arrangements for them. And I actually went to the concert then when it came to Chicago. And so when I heard that, I was listening. And I was like, okay, I can hear Fred in the vocals, but that music sounds a little different. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, when they called Fred and asked him to do that, Fred called me. He's like, yo, man, come up to the studio. Let's see what we can come up with. So he grabbed his bass and I had the keys and we just kind of came up with some arrangements for them. They knew the stuff that they could not handle. We looked at each other like, man, we got to do something with that thing, man. We went bananas with their arrangements. And so we had to change a lot of it and to fit what they were doing. But yeah, that was me.
Oh yeah. Oh, you know I know. You know I know. Because I'm listening to the arrangements. I'm like, okay, so I can hear vocally where this stuff is Fred. But when I started listening to some, I was like, oh man, that ain't nobody but Alex. And I hadn't even talked to him. We haven't talked. So
that was funny.
Exactly. So that's why that's the why I asked you the way I did. Like, yeah, you know anything about it? Yeah, man. Are you kidding me? So y'all just did arrangements for the new addition to it.
Yeah, we actually, because what made them do it, you know, me and Fred also, we partnered, we did the Nick Cannon movie. The Miracle on 100th and...
Absolutely, that did. Yeah. That just happened, yeah.
Yeah, so we like scored that whole thing. So that was like really cool. So that was our first connection with that. And then, you know, when the new addition thing happened, he did it again. Funny, they simple. They just, the music was, the band loved it, but they're like, man, and I kept their stuff in there, all their little toys.
Yeah.
But it was, I had to kind of calm it down a little bit. It was fun. I was like, y'all don't need me to do, I'm going to do a thing. When I'm going to do this thing. I got this thing starting called, Behind the Curtain with Ace of War.
Yes, sir.
But one of the extensions to it is I'm going to, at least once a month, I'm going to pick an artist and I'm a do a tour like version of one of their biggest songs and do it the way I would do it if I was MD in their tour.
I love it.
And I'm gonna just do that once a month and let people hear and see them.
Love it. I already love it. You're gonna use their vocals. You're gonna put their vocals on it.
I'm gonna try to get their vocals from them if they let me go at it. Then I'm gonna do it like I would do it if I was on tour. So I'm gonna see what
I love it. I love it, man. Listen, bro. Thank you. Thank you so much for trusting me with this to sit and have this conversation, man. I just appreciate it. I'm doing this and I could not continue to do this and not talk to you. I had to. You are definitely one of my musical inspirations and influences. We have done music together. And I'm going to say this. Me and Ace have some music that we've done together that nobody has heard, just a few
never people
heard. And it's just sitting there. So we got to decide.
Still play it.
Yeah, hey, man.
No. Listen. I still play it. I did a flyer the other week and I had one of them behind and in the background.
Wow.
So this still hot.
Yeah, that's, hey, man. We did
listen,
some.
Man, they don't know this. I gotta remind Todd about this. Remember we was on the boat and you said, hey, Asa, I mean, I want you to meet my boy, man. Todd tonight.
Right.
Like, man, he's a great writer. He's this. He's gonna be killing it, you know.
Exactly.
Killing the gas. That's my boy.
Yeah.
And nobody knew.
Yeah.
And I shook his hand. I'm so glad I was nice to him.
Right.
I'm nice. And then exactly what you said was going to happen.
Yes, indeed.
I just think that's amazing. And I'm like, I don't even know if that story ever got told.
Yeah.
But man, like, that was amazing. Yeah. Anyway.
Definitely was. You're right. I forgot about that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you introduced that. He was just on the boat. Nobody was tripping. Nobody tripped.
Yeah, I remember. Like, I definitely remember now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like, and you never know who God is going to bring on. You got to treat everybody the same. You got to treat everybody fairly and be positive about them, you know, because now everybody want to work with them, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, and I remember when nobody, I mean, he was walking around there and nobody knew him.
Of course.
It's like, now everybody do. I like, right. That would be nice. Man, that's so funny. But you said it. You don't want to introduce them to me. I was like, this is great.
Yes, indeed, bro. But hey, man, I'm just thankful for you, for your years of friendship and mentorship, man, and just loving me as your little bro, man, and taking me around with you and all of that. It's just, it's been great. And again, congratulations to you, man, on your bride. And
thank you.
This next level of your life, man, I know it is going to be far greater than even the first. I see so many things coming, man, and I can't wait for you to come to Chicago and do what you're doing. I'm sure it'll be more than just a masterclass. People have seen you talking about that lately, but I'm certain that when you get here and they experience you, that it'll be way more than they thought they were coming to get. They're going
It's going to be great, man. It's going to be cool. It's cool too.
Okay. Okay. And like I said, let's talk and let's, whatever we got to do to happen venue wise or whatever, just let me know. Let's get it done. Cause you definitely need, you got to come here. Just y'all keep it on your radar. He's going all over the country doing these masterclasses, just teaching and training and activating people's gifts. He's all over the place. He's always been. But he's my big brother. I love him and I'm proud of him. Y'all just give it up one more time for Asaph Alexander Ward. I love you, man.
Likewise, man. Love you too, man. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, man. So y'all listen, we love y'all. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for following the podcast. And we will see you guys again next week on Talk to Me.
Talk to me. Would you talk to me? Talk to me.